Okay, everybody, good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, November 7th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas, for our weekly Lunch and Learn. And this week we are going to be studying Parshat Toldot. And we could all turn to, in the Chumashim, to Sefer Bereshit, the book of Genesis, Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25, Pasuk Chaf Tet, 29. So again, we are on page 126 in the Chumashim. Excuse me for one second. We are going to be discussing Esav's reaction to the offer from Yaakov to purchase the birthright. Okay? We're familiar with this story? Okay? So, after Yitzchak, Rebecca is finally able to have a child, to have children, right? And the two children are Yaakov and Esav. And if we're looking on page 126, we'll just pick up the story. When her term Tober grew full, then behold, there were twins in her womb. The first one came out. He was red and hairy, and they called him Esav. Yatsa Achiv Viado Ochezet Ba'akev Esav, and then his brother came out grasping onto Esav's heel, Ve'ekra Shemo Yaakov, and they called his name Yaakov. Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Beledet Otam. Yitzchak was 60 years old when she bore them. Ve'yigdulu Ne'arim, and the children grew up. Ve'yi Esav Ish Yodeat Sayed Ish Sadeh Ve'yakov Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. Esav was a man of the field, and he was a trapper or a hunter, and Yaakov was Tom, was wholesome or pure, and he liked to stay home. Yoshev Ohalim. He was a couch potato. There are all sorts of... Well, so there are all sorts of midrashim that explain that he studied Torah. Exactly what Torah he studied is an interesting question, because there was no Torah. But that's what Rashi and others, based on midrashim and others, say. Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav ki tzayid b'fiv. Yitzchak loved Esav because he, for game was in his mouth. It sounds like he would provide him with good food, with barbecue. V'rivka ohevet et Yaakov. Rivka loved Yaakov. Vayazed Yaakov nazid. Vayavo Esav ben hasadev hu ayef. And one day, Yaakov was cooking a stew, presumably because he had no meat, because he did not go hunting, so he was cooking a stew. And Esav came home from his day out in the field, and he was tired. So Esav said, "Give me some of this food, I'm hungry. I'm tired." Okay, I'm tired, and that's why they call him Adom. And Yaakov said, "Fine." Vayomer Yaakov, "Michra Chayom et bechoratecha li. Sell me today the birthright." Sounds like he's making him a deal. If you want some of this lentil, whatever he was making, this porridge or soup, you have to sell me the birthright. Esav said, "Look, I'm going to die. So what use is this birthright to me?" Vayomer Yaakov, "Hishava li kayomer yishava lo." Yaakov said, "Okay, swear it to me," meaning swear to me that you're giving me over the birthright. And he does. Vayomkort b'chorato li Yaakov. And then he sold the birthright to Yaakov. Yaakov natan leisav lechem unezidat hashim. And so then Yaakov gave him bread and lentil stew. Vayochal vayesht. He ate and drank. Vayakam vayelech. He got up and he left. Vayivez Esav et ha-bechorah. And Esav hated or spurned, or whatever the translation is, the birthright. All right.
How old were they when this happened?
Isn't it just that easy to give up a birthright?
Unclear how old they are here. Good question.
Were they like, could be teenagers?
How do you,
they,
how do you translate what you guys?
I don't know the English term, but when you buzz or something, is when you
Right. He didn't want it anymore. Okay. That's the story. Now, let's. So the question I'd like to start off with is, what does Vayivez Esav et HaBechora mean? Or why? Related question. Why did Esav want to? It says there's an answer given in the Torah, but it's not clear what that means. I'm going to die, so what use is the Bechora? What did Esav see in the Bechora that he did not want, that he did not like? Why was he willing to give it up so easily?
So Esav himself said that he's going to die, so he doesn't need it.
What, right, so the question is, how is that,
but if he dies,
how is that an answer? How is that an answer that if he's going to die, he doesn't need it? What's the connection between?
But if he dies, doesn't
hold on. Let's answer one question. Chana?
I think that Esav was a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
In my point of view, hunter has the risk of being killed by animals, being the,
okay,
being
good.
Or, I don't know, lions or what.
Right. Good.
Will,
good.
Will eat him up. So he said, I'm in a profession that I'm going to die in one way or another. So I don't need a Torah, I'll give it to Yaakov.
Okay, excellent. Right, it could be, right? It's just the simple pshat, I think Chana's saying, is that he was a hunter, he was in a dangerous profession. The Bechora has to do with a Yerusha, something I'm going to get when my father dies, right? But I'm not going to live long enough to get that Yerusha, so I might as well cash it in now. It's like cashing in a life insurance policy while you're alive, right? What's the point? I might as well sell my life insurance policy now, and I'll get a certain amount of what I'm going to get now. Now, truth is, he gave it away for very little, but what's the point? I'm not going to get anything from my father anyway, because whatever he has, I'm going to be dead. I don't want it. Excellent. Okay.
If he wouldn't have gone back to Yaakov anyhow.
Does it go to...
If he dies...
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. If he dies, he's not going to get it.
Yeah,
so that's the point.
If he had children, would it go to his children?
I don't know. But I don't know. And that's a good question. I'm not sure.
I think
the heir and the spare.
Yeah.
But they didn't intend to say something. But I think it was just spontaneous because he gave up his Quran without thinking what he's giving for and what's the value. He was hungry.
Yeah.
The first motivation was
food.
Right.
And then perhaps some people were wondering, said, oh, why did you do that? Or then he said, well, he didn't have a choice already, so he said, well, it's not important. But
okay.
It's not that he really thought making a deal.
Okay. You're suggesting, Shula's suggesting, that when he said Lama Zeli Bechora, that was sort of, you know, it wasn't a well thought out process. But nonetheless, the Torah still says Vayivez Esav et HaBechora, right? The Torah says that about him. So
well,
the
deal is done.
But it
so
says here,
so they justified like that by saying, "Oh, it's not that."
So by the fact that he did sell it, the Torah, it's an indication that he. That it was of little value in his eyes. Yeah.
Did he know something? I mean, I just happened to read that. He says, I'm at the point of death. Did he know he was going to die, like in the near future?
Well, that's the translation of the pasuk. He comes in, he's very, very...
But he doesn't say I'm going to die. He says, I'm at the point of death, which means it could be imminent.
No, it might mean, you don't feed me, I'm going to die if I don't eat.
Where does he say that?
Yeah.
Where does he say that?
It says here, which is why you know that. First, sell me your, and he says, I'm at the point of death, so what use is my birthright to me?
Right, so that's what we're saying, meaning that's what Chana was saying. I'm at the point of death is maybe not a great translation. I like the translation in the art scroll better, Hine anochi holech lamut. I am going to die.
Well, maybe he knew
so
something.
What's the point of keeping it if I'm not going to be able to benefit from the Yerusha later on? Okay.
So he's, yeah. I'm confused. He's you make it sound as though he was, you know, that he was in a profession. But Barbara says, you know, he's famished now. I'm going to die right now if I don't get it. That's not what he's saying. He comes
it
in.
It could
and
be.
And
either way, it's a similar.
That's why, but that's why he despised it, because, you know, come on, is he really going to die?
Right. So that's. I don't think he was going to die. That's why I think it's. Hine anochi holech lamut.
Everybody is going to die.
Yeah. Right. So if you put that together.
On the brink of death.
Right.
No?
If you put it together with. That's why I have to read the whole thing in context. If you put it together with his. With his. Whether it was his job or his hobby, whatever it was, he was engaged in something that was dangerous.
Yeah.
I thought he was starving. I'm starving to death now.
You think he was literally starving to death?
I thought that, you know, obviously not.
Right.
But he was such a. He was so infantile about it. I want to eat right now.
Exactly. Well, maybe he came in so exhausted and so tired and so hungry.
Yeah.
Poor boy.
He would.
Right, but that wouldn't be a reason. That wouldn't be a reason to give up the Bechora. Meaning, the fact that I'm starving now is not a reason to give up the Bechora.
That's the only way Yaakov would give him
So he would have said, "Okay, I'll go get my own food." Meaning, but he's saying, "What's the point? Chances are, I'm going to go out tomorrow. I'm going to be hunting. I'm going to be attacked by whatever it is. I'm going to die. So I'm going to give it away. I'm going to sell it." Yeah.
Maybe he didn't like the Shulamit said. He didn't think so much about the deep or the what's the hashlachot. How do you say? What's the
outcome? The ramifications. Yeah.
Selling the Torah, but maybe he said, even if I am the Bechor, or I'm not the Bechor, what kind of Yerusha I will get? My father is. We live very modest life. And it doesn't matter if I'm the Bechor or not the Bechor.
So hold on. Before you go on, that's a good question. Hold on. Let's come back to that. Because on one hand, I'm not sure if that makes sense. And hold on. Because Avram was a very, very rich man. We know that. And presumably, he gave everything to his son Yitzchak. And then presumably, Yitzchak was going to give everything to the Bechor Esav. So why would we assume that there was no money?
Maybe
now we're gonna come back to that, but let's wait on that. Okay?
Is any other value in the Torah besides the Yerusha? I mean, what's the big deal?
So if you look at Rashi suggests a different approach, which is source number the second source on page one of your sheet. Rashi on Bereshit, he says, Vayivez Esav, Heid Hakatuv al Risho. So here Rashi says that the Torah is testifying to Esav's wickedness, shebizah avodato shel makom, that he despised the service of God, right? Meaning the Bechora brought with it some additional religious responsibilities, right? We at one point it was changed for the Kohanim took over that the realm of the additional responsibilities. But before that, really the Bechora was sort of seen as the religious leader of the family, the religious leader of the house, the Bechor was. And so Esav saying, I don't want that. I don't want anything to do with that. That's not my thing. So therefore, what Rashi said. Now, it's not clear exactly how Rashi fits this into the Psukim. Hine anochi holech lamut, right? What does that have to do with not wanting to not wanting to be the Bechor. If you look at Rashi in the Chumash, okay, that's in Pasuk Lamed Bet. Okay, so if you look at Rashi, right, look at Rashi in the Chumash. Look on page 126 in the Chumash, the bottom line of Rashi, on the left column, almost about the middle line, Amar Le, Kama Azharot Ve'onshin Umitot Tiluyin Ba. Ka'oto sheshaninu eluhein shebemitash tuyayin pere rosh amar ani holech lamut al yada imkein ma chafetz liba. Meaning, he says there are all sorts of additional. Bottom line of the left column. Yeah, last line of Rashi. Okay. Kama azharot ve'onshin u'mitot, meaning there are all sorts of halachot regarding the bechora, regarding the responsibilities of the bechor. And then he says, Amar, last line of the first, last word of the first line, Amar, ani holech lamut al yada, I am going to die because of these rules. I'm going to be punished because of these rules. I'm not going to be able to keep all these rules, and they're going to lead to me being punished. That's what it means. If I keep the Bechora, and I know I'm not going to be able to maintain the level of religious responsibility that it requires, the demands, I'm going to die. God's going to punish me because I'm not keeping the rules. What good is it for? Meaning, it's almost the opposite of what Chana is saying. Chana is saying, my current lifestyle is going to lead me to die anyway, so I might as well get rid of the Bechara, because the Bechara is only good for the Yerusha. So I'm going to get rid of the Bechara because I'm not going to live long enough to appreciate it. Rashi is saying, no, if I give up the Bechara, right, then I have a chance of living, because I'm not going to be held responsible for the rules. Right, so that's Rashi. So on the one hand is the pshat which Chana mentioned, and then you have Rashi where Rashi of course puts a negative spin on this that Esav did not want to take on the responsibilities of the Bechora, which is a terrible thing. You have an opportunity to be a leader, whatever, you should do it. Okay,
Rabbi.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? Yeah, I think Jacob can get it.
Pardon me?
Jacob didn't get it anyway.
He got the better blessing, Yaakov.
That's all he got.
No, that's not all he got. He got everything. He ran away
and left it all.
Very good point. The rest of the episode with stealing the birthright led Yaakov into a very, very difficult 20-year period. True. But he ended up being Yitzchak's the next one in the chain. It's not Avram, Yitzchak, and Esav. It's Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that's the whole prize.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters, right? That's the whole thing. So he did get it. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
No, he didn't know. He was a man of the field. He wasn't a man of study.
How do we know who's going to get it? You know the end of the story, but if we just read the simple story in the pasuk, it was going to be Esav, and then Esav said, "I don't want it." And then because Esav said, I don't want it, Yaakov felt justified in fooling his father to give him the bracha. But had not been for this part of the story, it would have been, we would have been saying, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Esav. Maybe that's sacrilegious to say, but we don't know what would have happened, right? Okay, now let's look at the Rashbam.
Avraham wasn't aware about the deal between the brothers?
Avraham is dead. Avraham's dead. Okay, here we go. Page 2. Page 2. Rashbam. Page 2. Vayivez Esav, Levisha Lesof Nitcharet Al Kach. Seeing that eventually Esav regretted having sold his birthright. Kidichtiv et Bechorati Lakach. Later on, when the whole thing with the whole stealing of the birthright and the costume and the feeling the hands, Esav is upset. He said he took my Bechora, meaning he's upset about it. Whether it was a legitimate sale or not, we see that Esav later on becomes upset about the fact that he sold it. He regrets his decision. So therefore the Torah goes on record here. That's why we have this story. Meaning the whole this is a little detail. What do we have this detail for? The reason we have this detail is because later when Esav is going to say that Yaakov took the Bechora, we can say, oh, no, look back in Perek Chaf Hey, he didn't take it. You have no right to go back on the bargain that he made in full knowledge. So he really didn't want. He didn't want the Bechora, but he did want the Bechora. But it was too late.
He didn't
it was
want the responsibility of the Bechora, but he wanted.
But at the end, he certainly wanted his father's bracha, and at the end, he regretted it, but the Torah tells us it was too late. Okay, yes.
At what point Yitzchak knew about the
deal? Only after Esav comes and says, I'm waiting for my bracha, and Yaakov says, I just gave you your bracha.
Yeah.
He says, no, that was not me, Pops. Yeah. Yes.
Pops. Since we are in this century, we know something about food addiction.
Yeah.
I think he was a food addict. Everything was food for him. He didn't want anything else.
But it says why he was food. It says he was tired. Yeah.
He's sick. Food addiction is a sickness. And then later on he said, I didn't want it. That makes sense.
I don't know. I think that's tough. Because it says Mifurash, ki ayefa nochi. I'm tired. I just came back.
Is the addiction.
Maybe.
He ate too much.
No. He was tired before. That's why I want the food. I need the food. I just came out of the field. I'm tired. I need something to eat. It's not stam. It's not just a stam. Okay.
Why does it say that it's Hakaav?
It's a good Yaakov.
Esav. Yaakov liked Esav. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. One second. Hold on. Wait. Let me give you a different interpretation. Maybe Yitzchak thought Yaakov was lazy. Look, Esav goes out. He brings me food. He takes care of the family. Yaakov's sitting around playing video games in the tent.
I would say that he was learning all the time.
Yeah,
those are right. Those are.
What was he learning?
Those are right. Those are. Hold on. Those are the midrashim. One second. Chana. Okay. So there are. If you just read the simple pshat of the psukim. Esav was providing for the family. This is what Hirsch says. This is the question that Hirsch is dealing with. Samson for all Hirsch. How could it be that Yitzchak liked Esav more? And he says, because Yitzchak saw this is the future. We need someone who's going to be strong, who's going to be able to provide. And Yaakov was not that person.
No.
However, Rivka saw something else in Yaakov. She saw maybe the more spiritual side, maybe the more responsible side. But just the pshat of the psukim, again, the midrashim, the general trend, the midrashim, once the Torah, once we see that Esav is rejected, then we have to justify it. We have to justify it, limafreya, right? So we retroactively say Esav was this, and this. But the pshat of the pasuk is not necessarily the case. Yeah.
There's something else going on in the pshat. If he's coming back from the field and he's hungry, that means he failed in his hunting. So not only is Yaakov taking advantage of the fact that he's hungry, he's taking advantage of the fact that he's depressed.
But he may not have failed anyway. He also takes a long time to prepare the food. He may have had something, but it takes a long time to clean it, to cook it. Okay. Right. I want to move on to another fascinating interpretation of what's going on here. We'll look at the Ibn Ezra. Okay, look at the Ibn Ezra on page 3. Look at the Ibn Ezra on page 3. Okay? Vayivez Esav et Bechora. Page 3 of the source sheet. Right? Why is it again that Esav did not want the Bechora? So on the one hand, Chana says he didn't want it because he was going to die anyway because he was in a dangerous line of work. And Rashi says he didn't want it because it brought too many responsibilities, which he thought was going to lead to his demise being punished by God. Ibn Ezra says, hold on, I have a much more down-to-earth practical answer. Vayivez Esav, gam zot ha-bechora, shera'a she'ein la'aviv osher. He saw that his father had no money. Right? He had, no, I think Chana said it. He had no money. And if the bechora is about the Yerusha, then what's the point of taking the Bechora? I might as well get what little I can now, because my father has nothing to give me anyway when he dies. So this raises an interesting question. As I said before, where does the Ibn Ezra come up with this idea?
And where is the money?
Right. I do not know if we're going to be able to answer the question, where is the money? But we have a more fundamental question. Besides, where is the money? Where does the Ibn Ezra come up with this idea that Yitzchak is poor? Assuming, right, Vashem berachat Avraham bakol, and Avraham had everything, and he had flocks, and he had a whole household, and he was making deals with princes, with kings, right? Where does the Ibn Ezra come up with this idea that, and presumably he gave it to Yitzchak?
No, he gave Lot another thing, remember?
No, he and Lot split ways.
No, they left, they split ways. No, they split, they went, Lot went away.
Did he give money to Lot?
No, Lot went away. He said, I don't want to be with you.
Doesn't mean he didn't want the money when he went away.
But he wasn't given the money.
Right.
Okay, let's look at the Ibn Ezra's...
That was agreed with them.
Not in the Torah. Let's look at the Ibn Ezra's reasons. The Ibn Ezra looks at the Psukim and finds fascinating textual proofs that Yitzchak was poor. We don't know why, but we know, according to the Ibn Ezra, we could prove from the text that he was poor. So here we go. One, they're listed. Ve'ilu haya halechem rav bebeit aviv, v'hu nichbad beinav, lo machar b'chorato ba'avur nezid. Right? If there was a lot of wealth and food available in the house, why would Esav had sold his, right, for a little bowl? He would have said,
because he's a food.
One second. Okay, we understand that, okay? So, he would have said, right, if there's food around, why would he give up the bechora for a little bowl of porridge? It's like, if he comes out, it's like the most amazing thing in the world. That's number one. Number two. Vimaya aviv ochel bechol yom matamim matam amar hevi elitzayed. Right, if there was food available all the time, why did Yaakov have to say to Esav, go into the fields and hunt me some food? He would have said to his household workers, go shecht me one of my whatever I have and make me something. Why would he send his son out into the field if it was readily available, right? Who goes, people who go, like you always see people, fishing in the, in New York, you see people fishing on the bay where Gabi lives, right? In Bell Harbor, Shula, right? I always wondered, it's always interesting, this is free food. If you had money, you'd go to the market and you buy yourself a fish. If you don't have money, go fish in the bay. It's free. So is the Yar free. The forest is also free. He sends his son to go get free food instead of, because he had nothing else.
He wouldn't have had a reason to prefer Esav on Yaakov. So then he would say that.
Right. But why does he like Esav? Now we know why he says, I'd like Esav more. He'd side with Fiv. I have no food in the house. Esav could use a bow and arrow and get me food. Yaakov's sitting in the tent. He's worthless.
Anyway. He had food anyway.
No, he didn't.
Sure he did.
That's what we're sowing.
Where did he
All he had was a little bowl of porridge. He had no meat. He had no matamim. He had nothing good.
Why did he say it tastes like, the food tastes like a bomba?
That's when Esav went and got him food, and then his wife got him, managed to get him something to feed him. Correct. Number three, v'lama lo haya liyakov bigadim chamudot. Right. Later, when he had to go change the clothes. Right. Four, v'lama lo natnalo imo kesef v'zahab b'derech shomer v'natani lechem lecholu beged l'bosh. When Yaakov was running away, why didn't his mother send them off with stuff? He ends up with nothing. V'lama lo shalcha alav hon v'hi ohevet otoki hu trach l'shmor hatzon. Right? So all of these, and if you, they're summed up on the bottom of page 4 by Rabbi Carmiel Cohen from Yeshiva Birkat Moshe. He sums up all of these answers. Avat Yitzchak Aleph. Avat Yitzchak le'esav ki tzayid b'fiv dahaynu shehu mevi tzayid l'piv shel Yitzchak. Muvenet yoter la'or ha'yidiyashi, Yitzchak haya ani. That's, like we said, that's why he loved Esav so much. Two, Esav sheya ahuv al aviv v'lo haya mocher et b'chorotov b'avur nezidat Hashem ilu haya halechem rab b'bayit aviv. Esav wouldn't have sold it had there been food. Three. Bakashat Yitzchak l'aviv lo tzayit k'dei l'zkot l'birkato mochiach she'achilat matamim lo haya davar shigrati etzlo. Right, the fact that Yaakov was willing to give the b'chora to Yaakov after Yaakov brought him some food means that this was something special. This is something unique. There are other ways to explain it, but this is Ibn Ezra. Four, ha'uvda shel Yaakov lo hayu bigdei chamudot milamedet et onia shel hamishpacha. Now, Yaakov didn't have nice clothing. Testifies, apparently not, testifies that they were poor. Kisheyatsa Yaakov mibe'er sheva l'charan b'kesh merkadosh baruch hu sheyitain lo lechem l'chol ubeged l'bo. She asked God to give him food and clothes. Kevan shelo haya lo klum, because he had nothing on his own. Hadavar mochia shelo haya lo horav malatet lo. His parents didn't have what to give him. Bioto b'charan, and then finally, bioto b'charan avad Yaakov kashem ha'od b'shmirat ha'tzon. Right, when he was working for Rachel and Leah. Right, he worked to watch the tzon, the flock. Ilu haya lo horav kesef, vaday sherivka she'ava oto hayta sholechet lo, uvekach chosechet lo avodah kasha. He could have come to Lavan, he would have said, you know, I got all the money, I'm not working for you, I don't need your money. Right, the fact that I'm working for you indicates that that I need your money.
Where did the money go?
We don't know. We don't know where it went. But this is really fascinating. So really, the Ibn Ezra saying, Vayivez Esav et ha-Bechora, he didn't want the Bechora for a simple reason. There was no Bechora. There was nothing left. All the Bechora was is a Yerusha, and there's no Yerusha. How do I know it's Yerusha? Here's 6 points that proves that there's no Yerusha. Yeah.
Is there any discussion of the fact that when Yaakov goes back finally to confront Esav, and Esav is obviously very rich by that time. He has all these men with him.
Right, and Yaakov is rich by that time.
And they're both rich. So is there any discussion about these guys about where that money came from?
We know where Yaakov's money came from.
Yeah, that we know, but where Esav came from?
No.
Because I remember we had a...
When he finally worked his way up with Rachel and Leah, and he became a rich man with the spotted sheep and the... Right?
We had a speaker who said that maybe it was you, that Yitzchak was not he was a farmer, he wasn't a cattle... a shepherd.
We know very little about Yitzchak right, and what
so,
he did.
And that
could
have been crop for this one, but obviously Esav recovered if there was no money.
Esav recovered and Yaakov recovered.
Yeah.
They made it good.
Now, so this is a fascinating approach to the reason why Esav did not want the Bechora. He simply didn't want it because there was nothing. There was nothing there for him to take. Okay, I want to look at one other thing. Yeah.
Isn't there also, but isn't it assumed that in the Bechora is this brit between Avraham and God that I will make, right? That's part of the inheritance. Right?
That's certainly, Rashi seems to, maybe that's what Rashi is saying, that all the additional responsibilities and the bracha is passed on, yeah. But
this covenant with God is part of it, and that's what it seems to be. That's what traditionally, when you're in cheder, that's what you learn. That's what Esav despised.
Right. That's again. The pshat is not so, at least for the Ibn Ezra. Right.
Okay.
Right. All right. I want to show you something very interesting here on page 2. Okay. Page 2 is from a non-Jewish Bible scholar who offers a different translation of this whole narrative that provides a different explanation of Esav's activities. Now Rebekah was barren, and Isaac prayed to the Lord for her, and the Lord answered his prayer, and Rebekah conceived, and when it was time for her to give birth, twins came out of her. The first one was red and hairy like a fur cloak, so they named him Esav, the shaggy one. And then his brother came out, with one hand grasping Esav's heel, so they named him Yaakov, heel grasper. And when the boys grew up, Esav became a skilled hunter, a man of the open country, and Jacob was a peaceful man who stayed near the tents. And Isaac loved Esav because he brought him venison to eat, but Rebekah loved Jacob. One day, as Jacob was cooking a stew, Esav came back from hunting, and he was famished. And he said to Jacob, give me a heap of that red stuff, I am famished. So his translation of give it to me, right? We have ki ayef anochi means tired, but he says it's I'm famished. And Jacob said, first sell me your birthright. And Jacob said, swear for I'm famished. That's
Joseph said, I'm dying of hunger.
Ki tzad b'fiv v'ayizah m'naziv m'asadev hu ayef, which mean we translate as tired, but he translates as famished. And then Yaakov, v'yomer Esav al Yaakov, v'litein lam edom hazek, ki ayef anochi, give it to me because I'm famished. Alkein kirashimo edom. V'yomer Yaakov, machrak hayom, Yaakov said, first sell me your birthright. And Esav said, I'm dying of hunger. Hinei olich lamut, what good is my birthright to me?
Oh, that's what I learned in Chayim.
And Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore to him and sold him his birthright. Then Yaakov gave Esav bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and got up and went away. This is how Esav showed how little he valued the birthright. At the end, when we say, Vayivez Esav et ha-bechora, that Esav hated or scorned the birthright, his translation is, this shows us that, or how little he valued the birthright. Meaning, it's a little less, it's sort of like what Shula is saying, it's a little less direct. He didn't like make a decision, like, I hate the Bechora, and so therefore, right? The fact that he was willing to sell the Bechora for this bowl of lentils shows that he didn't really value the Bechora, which you could say is what you were saying. He didn't really give it much thought. He was just in the moment, and in the moment he said, I need this, and that proves it in value, because had he really valued it, he wouldn't have made such a spur of the moment decision to sell it for the birthright.
The fact that he said I'm going to die anyhow. So what do I need the birthright?
He says
he says
I am dying of hunger. What good is the birthright?
Yeah, but he doesn't say anything about what you said before, that you know he didn't need the Yerusha.
Well, he's understanding it differently. That these are different interpretations of what's different interpretations of what's going on, right? So he's saying no, there is something. But even though there is something, he thought little of it, certainly in the moment, because he was very impulsive. He wasn't able to control his impulse of what he needed at that very moment. But the main sort of dish on the plate today was supposed to be the Ibn Ezra, right? This fascinating approach that the Ibn Ezra uses through six different sort of proofs within the story that Yitzhak had no money, and since Yitzhak had no money, Esav, and by the way, so that paints Esav maybe not such a bit, not necessarily in a bad light, just very practical. What do I need this for? Yeah.
Are there any sources that point to the fact that what Jacob did was a rotten, stinking thing? Your brother comes in, and he says, I'm hungry, and instead of saying, oh, here, I have some food, take it, he says, oh, first you've got to give me the only valuable thing I know that you have.
That's
it's a terrible thing to
right.
Jacob.
So we do have the Midrashim that sort of indicate, or the, I'm not sure if the Midrashim, but there are interpretations that say Yaakov, who got fooled later in his life, right, was sort of, it was Midah Keneged Midah,
exactly.
For this episode, mostly the episode.
It's only after Laban does
later.
To him what he did to Esav that
right.
He realized.
So that's,
I was a no good Nick. I got to go back and make
so
this
that,
right.
That is an indication. Although others will argue, and I think this is one of the interpretations that sometimes we know this is true, and we're going to talk about more of this on Shabbat, the Shabbat class. We know that sometimes lying is permissible, right? Lying. Truth is not an absolute value.
This is not lying. It's
why
just
why is it lying?
Well, misleading. Let's say misleading him, right?
He
misleads him by, as Dov said, he takes advantage of him, right? By demanding the item, the one thing that Esav had. So there is an element of lack of truthfulness or lack of uprightness. And we do know there are certain times in halacha where that's certainly it's permissible. Right? If someone says, I want to kill so-and-so. Is he in the closet? If he's in the closet, you don't have to say he's in the closet. This is not Immanuel Kant, right? You don't have to say he's in the closet. You have to, you have to lie and say, no, he's not in the closet. He ran that way.
Kant will tell you
that. Right?
That's implied that question mark about what kind of household it was. They were not even, the kids, I guess,
they were human,
grew up,
like everybody
not
else.
Like each other.
Well, there's no indication they didn't like each other. Right. There's
like
no at this.
Said, you're hungry. Come on.
Right. That's a true. That's a good point. That's a fair point.
What?
Is there some sort of breakdown in the relationship between Esav and Yaakov that Yaakov wasn't right? So the traditional way, Shula, the traditional way of answering all of that is to say, if Yaakov was doing this, of course, for a higher purpose, he knew that this was the future of the Avram and Yitzhak chain. And that it had to be him, which is also why Rivka got involved in it, and she was part of the whole ruse to get Yitzchak the bracha instead of Esav, right? Yaakov the bracha instead of Esav. That Rivka knew this was part of God's bigger plan. That's not necessarily the pshat. Anyway, we're going to stop here with this very interesting notion of the Ibn Ezra and his very, very careful reading of the text. To indicate that Yitzchak was a pauper at this point, despite the fact that the assumption is that he got all of Avraham's wealth, and somewhere along the line, it's gone. We don't know where it went. We don't know what happened to it. But it seems like it is gone at this point. Okay. Have a wonderful day, everybody.